is Radio 314 on the Red Ice Radio Network.
Hello, everyone. This is Lana, and thanks for tuning into another Radio 314 interview. Well, we're back talking about the messy, dirty laundry of the unhealthy relationships between women and men and how it's unfolding in politics, propaganda, and society. Last time we spoke with Lisa Arbuteski about how feminism has been turned and used as a tool for psychological warfare against women. Now we're going to hear the flip side of feminism and what it is doing to the men today. Paul Elam, the founder of avoiceformen.com, joins me to discuss the subject that receives very little attention, if any, from the mainstream. Welcome, Paul. Thanks for being here with me today.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Well, I've been combing through your website, avoiceformen.com, which has a lot of powerful truths on it for people to read, points that are not addressed by mainstream, which has to make one wonder. But tell us how you came to creating the website and your general philosophy behind it.
Well, I initially got interested in the issues surrounding gender politics in the mental health field. I was a substance abuse counselor, addictions counselor for 20 years here in Houston. And I noticed during the 80s that there was a change in mentality that seemed to be coming out of our academic institutions regarding the relationships between men and women. We went from, I think, some kind of spirit of cooperation, although men and women have always had their differences. Mm-hmm. But there was an attitude coming out of academe that was overtly hostile to men. And to be honest with you, I sort of rode that wave myself when it started happening. I became very involved in trying to understand women's issues and to the special circumstances they faced, perhaps particularly in treatment settings, things like that, and in establishing programs and special tracks for women and in educating my staffs of counselors on dealing with special populations, particularly women. And I still think that at the time that happened, that was probably a very good thing. But what seemed to come with it in ever-increasing doses was an animosity toward men, not just an understanding of women's circumstances or looking for ways to address their unique concerns, but a demonization and vilification of men that came with that. It became really a concern for me. And after a few years of that, my attitude started changing, and I started wondering where this was coming from. And in digging into that, that was my first sort of real exploration of the politics of gender. And it led me to the writings of people like Warren Farrell, Christina Hoff Sommers, and others that had written in dissent of academic feminism and had opened my eyes. They opened my eyes up to a lot of ways of thinking about gender and gender politics that I had never considered. And I was running from there.
Wow. Well, before we really get into this, I think we should go back and briefly discuss feminism in the beginning, because it's much different today what they're after. Back then, women wanted to vote. They wanted to have reproductive rights, equal pay, although that's not fair if they're less qualified, and they wanted to go to school. You see, for me, I have an anarchist view, so to me, all these demands for rights are a step backwards. To me, I'd say to move forward, government should be abolished and found illegitimate, and so should all the artificial constructs others create for you. What do you think?
I wouldn't disagree with that. I don't know if I can classify myself as an anarchist, but I'm certainly of the mind that the smaller government, the better.
Yeah.
And that these agendas that people have, that they wage through government, only serve to build bureaucracies that end up controlling more of our lives and in not so egalitarian ways.
Yeah.
So I don't think we're far off the same page. I do think that there were discrepancies in this society that worked against both sexes for as long as we've been human. There are roles that men and women have assumed through biology, through socialization, that put certain limitations on women, put certain limitations on men, at least within the confines of our own minds.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly, there were things that I think for both sexes that there and still are things that we do well to overcome. I just don't think government's the answer. And I think as we've seen with the absolute hegemony over the discussion of gender that the government has fostered, through gender feminism, we find that the people are not overcoming anything. As a matter of fact, things are becoming in some ways more regressive.
Oh, yeah, there's a polarization process happening anytime there's a special group that's demanding rights. And in my view, rights are not given to you. You take them, you make them so. You don't ask for permission, and you don't need a state to sanction something for you. I mean, this is what a strong individual does. I think that looking back, if women took that stance long ago, many men would have backed them up, and they could have split off and maybe even created a new kind of society, especially in the early days of the Wild West, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And this is why we certainly, at A Voice for Men, we don't look for government to fix anything. We're not looking. I mean, we point out the fact that there is, for instance, very well-heeled, federally funded offices on women's health in the federal government, despite the fact that they outlive men and that there's nothing for men. But we don't call for government to form offices for men's health.
Yeah.
This is information, simply to give people, to let them look at the disparities in our society. But our solutions are in our own minds and in our own choices.
That's right. So if we fast forward to today, what do feminists really want?
Everything. Everything with a capital E. And, and we're laughing as I say that, but as I look at the evidence, as I look at the agendas of feminists in our branches of government, as I look at them in our academic institutions, in our media, what I see very clearly is a domineering move for complete ownership of the discussion about sex and gender. I see absolute bullying of people of dissenting views. One example I'll give you, Murray Strauss, Dr. Strauss is a very eminent researcher in the area of intimate partner violence. And he was bullied so much by feminist ideologues that he actually produced a paper outlining their techniques for silencing, for skewing research, for producing bad figures, and for punishing anybody that got in their way. And a very convincing paper, and it is in practice with the full blessing of our wonderful government to this very day.
Wow. Yeah, I just, when I look around at some of these crazy feminists, it seems like they want a society where women are basically relieved of all responsibility. They can openly express man hate and shaming tactics. They're feminizing boys and demonizing men. So why this war against men?
Well, I think it is a pathology of a kind. It is a very strange one to watch, because when you hear feminist rhetoric, you hear them talking about women's empowerment. Yet everything that they seem to actually do looks more like the infantilization of women than it does their empowerment. It is all about them not taking responsibility for their actions, having somebody to blame, regardless of what they do. And it is this total contradictory message, which most ideological agendas are, if you actually study them. But what do feminists want? I think for many of them, they want their fathers. They want government to be their father. They want men, generally speaking, to be their father, not their partnership in life. But as a father figure, to take care of their problems, to fix things for them. In other words, what they want is a restructuring of the very patriarchy that they have said has been responsible for women's oppression and limitations for ages.
Yeah, there's a video that you posted. It's titled, "I Don't Need a Man," but let me read a few of these. She says, "I don't need a man, but if I get pregnant, I demand money. I don't need a man, but I demand standards be lowered so I can compete with men in any workplace. But I demand free healthcare be provided, and I demand to be paid the same even if I'm a worse employee. I don't need a man, but I demand maternity leave from my employer, but I demand protection from the men in military, police, and firefighters. I don't need a man, but I demand any accusation against men be accepted unconditionally by authorities." And that is so true.
Yeah, oh, of course. You obviously, somebody needs a man somewhere in that equation, even if it's just for somebody to blame. I mean, my goodness, we had our current president basically I think, got reelected on the platform of free birth control. Because he counted on a culture of women that weren't willing to cough up $6 a month for their own birth control. how insulting is that?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, one of the side effects of feminism, and this is a very difficult area to talk about, but I really believe it's true, is that we have cultivated a society. It isn't just feminism that is infantilizing women. We've cultivated a society that is infantilizing women and is giving them expectations that they are owed, that they're victims. A lot of this stems from feminism, but it also emanates from more traditional conservative elements in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
That women are to be patted on the head and told they're pretty and not to have expectations of agency and accountability. I find that feminists and traditionalists make often very strange bedfellows, but they are.
Sure, there could be a guy who's an asshole out there, or you don't like your boss, or you don't like your boyfriend, but it's your fault for being there and for not leaving. Take some responsibility. Wisen up. You know, it's these are unhealthy, dysfunctional women who are thinking this way.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to inform them, but men have been dealing with asshole bosses for a few thousand years.
That's right.
And what do? If the boss is that much of an asshole, they go find a different job or they go start their own business, even better. And they become the boss, and then they can be an asshole if they want to. But that's part of our individual liberties and our individual freedom. The idea that we need to reshape society like it's clay so that nobody of any particular class of people doesn't have to deal with assholes is outrageous. But that's what we're doing.
Exactly. It's part of why we're here is to learn to settle our own conflicts, not run to the government and ask for them to do it for you all the time. It's very weak.
Like they do such a good job.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I know this is a big question and it would take hours and books to explain, but can you tell us some of the major issues men face that you've been highlighting on your website?
Well, let me take it to the basics for you, and then maybe we can expand on those issues that emanate from that. Looking at this from a psychosocial approach, the biggest issues that men face in this culture revolve around their interpersonal relationships with women. That is the starting point. There are parts of our conditioning as men that we're socialized into. I think part of it is biology. But there was forever a needed, I think, set up standards on men and women for the survival of the species that required men to fulfill a role in life as a protector and a provider, just as women were expected to fulfill the role of nurturers of children and providing for them and taking care of them. I totally understand how those roles developed and why they developed, and the fact that probably for a time they were essential to our survival as a species. I don't see that as being such a necessity now. And what we have is ostensibly a society of women that allegedly has moved out of that dependency role and into their own independence. And in some ways, that's very true. But that move, that change would have required and does require some sort of corresponding reaction from men. Doesn't mean that it requires the government or anybody handing men a set of instructions. But a lot of men do feel lost in this culture, wondering sort of how they're supposed to be with women, what they're supposed to do. And basically, they're stuck with the same set of expectations of men that we had in 1930 in a world that has changed.
Mm-hmm.
So what we talk about a lot at A Voice for Men is the choice of men to gravitate away from that role, to see themselves as something other than a protector and a provider whose mission in life is to secure the happiness and comfort of a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a very controversial position. We think it's a very necessary one for men in order for men to free their minds in a lot of ways. But that's what we push for. Now, extensions from that get into areas. We have quite a problem among many social problems with things like false rape allegations. They happen because our legal system loves victims, and it is makes it very user-friendly for false allegations to happen, both in criminal courts and during the course of divorces, especially when allegations are just rampant because of ex parte restraining orders being issued with no evidence and giving people a leg up in divorce proceedings. A lot of men don't fight that happening. They just take it. It is amazing the number of men that I've talked to that have been drugged into a family court and severed from their children by an abusive family law system, and that just stand there and take it and don't realize that what is happening to them happens to thousands and thousands of other men in those courts. And they are totally reticent to speak up or say anything about it. And when we dig into that with them, we find that many of them feel like they cannot put themselves in a position of being in combat with a woman, or in other words, of seeing her as an equal, even in the adversarial sense. And so we work with a lot of men on understanding that that programming in them is not necessarily their best friend, and maybe it never was.
So where did this programming come from? Because it's definitely in play. Has it been from violence and from war? Have men been beaten down into submission?
Well, I think all human beings in some way or another have been beaten down into submission. I really think this came from deficiency needs and survival needs. I think that the general, what you'll find in most human beings is that men tend to be larger and stronger and more aggressive and more capable of physical violence. And so they have been trained through 3 million years of human socialization to take on that role of protector and provider. And that if a male dies, I mean, let's face it, one of the things we talk about a lot in my culture, in the men's rights culture, is male disposability. And the fact of the matter is, biologically, that if a male dies or perishes, goes down with a ship, while we put a woman on a lifeboat, we've lost a sperm supplier in that regard, but we've lost the incubator if the woman goes down. We've lost the ability to procreate. And during times when human beings were living on the African savanna, I think it was probably a really big deal that we used whatever resources were necessary to protect women. Because if we didn't, we were done. We were just going to be another dead-end evolutionary experiment.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So I think that our socialization stems from that. Ultimately, it has passed through generations and generations all the way up to our laws and customs that are still somehow rooted in that sociobiological determinism. Well, we're also finding with technology that determinism is not the big deal that it used to be. We do have choices to make. We don't live in an environment where the saber-toothed tiger is going to come in the front door and gobble us up if we don't have a man standing there. And this is what I think allowed feminism to emerge in the first place. If we were living in a survival environment, I was, I was just in Alaska for a couple of weeks for a vacation. And up there, the locals, now we're not talking about the tourists, but the locals live off of the land in many cases. They're out there hunting, they're fishing, they're trapping, they're doing things like a lot of us did here 100, 150 years ago. And you don't see feminism in play in Alaska near like you do it would in Texas or South Carolina.
That's so true.
What you see is men and women cooperating to get things done, but that the idea of gender equity and everybody making sure that we have egalitarian rules that govern our conduct between each other, you wouldn't even hear that nonsense up there, nor would you in any place in the undeveloped world, in non-industrialized nations. You don't see it. It's technology that allowed feminism to emerge, and in a culture that has technology, perhaps it should. Perhaps there needs to be the freedom for all human beings to make their choices. But those choices then have to also be extended to men. And so far, this culture has not done that. We've done a lot to talk about women's choices and what their lot is in life. And I personally favor a lot of those things. Of course, I think women should vote. Of course, they should be allowed to be educated and hold jobs and to have access to owning land or doing anything else that they want to do to pursue happiness. At the same time, it's men's gender role that often inhibits them psychologically from making those same pursuits on their own behalf without thinking of women first. And we work on changing that, which is just, we have a very big job.
Oh, yeah. Whenever you're talking about something that's in the mind that needs to be deprogrammed, it's a biggie. So in your view, you talked about cooperation, which I completely agree between the sexes. In your view, what is a healthy relationship between a man and a woman?
One with completely mutual agency and responsibility. And that doesn't necessarily mean the same workload. I've been in a relationship for 11 years. If something goes bump in the night, I'm going to be the one to get up and go check it out. Because in that circumstance, that's what's practical. But my partner works. My partner pays half the bills in our home. My partner and I both have expectations that we take responsibility for our mistakes, and that we work on correcting things, that there isn't a set of rules. There's no princes and no princesses in this home. Mm-hmm. And we don't go in that direction at all. And, you know, I've got to hand it to my partner. In a culture that encourages women to have the expectations of loyalty in many cases, she's done an amazing job of being a self-sufficient person with agency and accountability. And I think that's the key right there. We don't have a rule here that says, well, you take out the trash because you're a man, because she's actually capable of taking out trash. And I know that these are real small things that I'm talking about, but I think in the mentality that we approach the relationship with, it's one of mutual respect and mutual expectation.
Absolutely. And I think too, there might be different couples. There might be some men that are rich and they just kind of want a pretty Barbie doll, but they have an agreement and it works for them.
Well, and I certainly, if that's their choice, I mean, you're not going to hear me tell them that they shouldn't do it. However, a lot of the emails I get are from guys that got the Barbie doll and then got the family court that came with it.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, there is still snakes in the wood pile. And if you want a Barbie doll in life, I would argue that's probably what you're going to get. But you know something? Barbie dolls are not really that cute when they have a lawyer standing next to them.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Well, another issue I keep hearing feminists bring up is males are so violent and, you know, they're all wired to rape. But I was just reading that 40% of domestic cases in the U.S. are from women's violence against men.
And those are just a lot of the cases. If you look at the work, I mentioned Murray Strauss earlier. There's Martin Fibert out at Southern Cal who put together an exhaustive body of research that covered a group of over 337,000 people in surveys and empirical studies. There are many, many other studies, all that demonstrate what's called gender symmetry, that women are as likely, if not a little more likely than men in relationships to initiate violence physically. There is a lot of evidence to suggest that women are injured in those relationships more frequently, which would make sense given the relative body mass difference between men and women. But in terms of using violence itself, it's roughly an equal proposition. And I think in a very important note, and this is where feminism has not only gotten it wrong, they've gotten it wrong with the terrible result in damage to our culture. By painting men as the only perpetrators of domestic violence, which is not true, and women as the only victims, which is also not true, they have ignored not only male victims of female violence, they are also ignoring the children in the homes where the mother is the one that is violent. And, you know, children are traumatized by family violence, and they don't care whether it was dad hitting mom or mom hitting dad. They are messed up over this stuff regardless of who it was. And at the same time, and again, I'm not saying this to advocate that the government should find solutions for people, but we live in a culture that is government dependent. Mm-hmm. When men look for social services because they have an abusive spouse, they're laughed out. And they're screamed out and often told that they're the abuser. They released a study not too long ago from Great Britain that said that men that called police to intervene in domestic situations when they were the ones being physically attacked were more likely to be arrested than their wives.
Wow.
Because the police are trained with the Violence Against Women Act here in the United States. At least our police are trained with funding from that act, which is driven by gender ideologues, to believe that only men can be perpetrators, and they look for ways to arrest the man when they show up. So this gets translated into state functionaries actually showing up at people's doors and arresting victims because of their sex. That's what's happening across this country right now. It's absolutely insane. Yet we live in a culture that's pretty much conditioned to ignore the issues of men. So the mainstream media and most other people, as you've already alluded to, won't even touch it.
So what do you think about some of these elite men that are in power, like the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds? How do they look at this issue? Because, I mean, they're men that are ruling the world.
Well, I think that the corporatocracy loves feminism. Most consumerism is female. If you look at the wage, we talk a lot about wage gap between men and women. And it's true that men on average make more than women. It's because of their life choices, not because of sex discrimination.
Yeah.
But women spend most of disposable income. It's why if you turn on a television, you're going to see plenty of TV advertising where men are being slapped or kicked in the groin or told that they're inept or stupid or made to look like cavemen or whatever, and where women are portrayed as the shining light of genius in the family that has all the answers. Yes,
oh,
my wife told me to take 2 Tylenol and my headache is cured. God bless my wife. I would have never known to take Tylenol had it not been for my intelligent wife and, you know, cut to the next program of Desperate Housewives. But consumer culture is driven by female consumerism. So it makes sense to me that corporations are certainly never going to do anything but be very, very friendly to feminist ideals or any ideals that they feel like are user-friendly for women. If we're going further up the chain to the Rothschilds, to the Rockefellers, I don't know. I've had mixed feelings on this for a long time. I tend to be more of an Occam's razor kind of guy, that the simplest explanation is probably the most logical, but I think that anything is possible. It's certainly illogical to assume that families like the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds don't have an inordinate amount of control of what happens in our government.
Actually, it's Abby Rockefeller, one of the daughters. She's a feminist, like hardcore lesbian feminist, and she started up, was it Cell 16 or something like that? And it's a very violent organization that's all about basically just eradicating men.
Oh, yeah, we've dealt with a few of those. The radical feminism is going unchecked by the media. It's amazing that we did an expose where we had, we got the identities. We had an infiltrator into a forum of radical feminists. One of them included a best-selling author for Simon & Schuster, Pamela O'Shaughnessy. There is a number of other individuals in there. One of them had an affiliation with the United Nations. There were community planners. We got all their names. They were having discussions in a supposedly secret forum online where they were talking about murdering as many men as possible, castrating as many men as possible, throwing young boys out of windows, calling all young boys rapists in waiting. This horrific, horrific conversation going on between people in very, very influential positions. We did a story on it. We outed these people completely and exposed what they were up to, what they were doing. And we got huge traffic to the site from our audience. I think that article was hit 150,000 times in 24 hours. We sent out feelers across the Western world to the mainstream media on this with our documentation, and nobody would touch it.
Jeez. So why is mainstream media not giving any attention to this subject?
Because you can't risk offending women and sell your goodies. You can't. You can't upset women. The first thing that happens, imagine a politician who stands up and says, we're ignoring issues faced by men. What do you think his longevity is in politics? Zero. Now, if he stands up and makes a claim for women, he gets applauded. And it doesn't matter which side of the political aisle that he's on. But this goes back to the human biology. We're wired to protect women, and we're wired to see men as disposable. So anybody that stands up and says, hey, you know, these guys in divorce courts, it's a really terrible what's going on. And the abuses in family courts are absolutely just unbelievable what's happening in there. Nobody will talk about it, because the first thing that's going to happen if they do is that the feminist lobby will start screaming woman hater and misogynist. Mm-hmm. And it will hurt them. They can't survive that. If they get hung with the misogynist label, now, I think A Voice for Men is starting to play a role in maybe having some hope for a change in that, because we have been so assertive with our message and pounding it so hard, and we've gotten so popular that we're starting to see more and more, even in the media, little bits, people standing up here and there saying enough is enough. We're going to start standing up to this kind of nonsense. We hope that trend continues, because until it changes, none of this will ever get addressed, because nobody will be able to survive politically unless they side with women. And it doesn't make any difference if they're really hurting women by doing so. They still need to appear like they're siding or they're toast.
Jeez. Yeah, the other thing I noticed too, and you see it in TVs and movies all the time, it's just boys don't cry. They're sissies if they say that they're being abused and they don't really have feelings. Otherwise, you're not a man. You know, be a man. Man up, right?
Well, that's when I was talking about feminism and traditionalism being strange bedfellows. That's exactly what I'm talking about, is that you have feminists who have claimed for at least 50 years that they're all about ending gender roles and that we all need to be freed from this. And the moment a guy stands up and says, you know what, you're right, I don't think I'm going to get married. I don't think I'm going to try to shoot for the corporate ladder. I think I'm going to go under the radar and sort of tell the whole world to screw off. Yeah. That I'm go my own way. The feminists are the first one to start screaming, you need to man up. and we had Kay Heimowitz do that recently, right on the heels of Bill Bennett doing it in separate pieces, one of them in the New York Times, and I forget which one, but Kay Heimowitz was telling men to man up. She's from the feminist camp. And then Bill Bennett, a notorious neocon, jumps up and writes a similar article. I was just laughing hysterically.
Jeez. Well, what do they want when they use terms like gender equality? I mean, because the word equality can be debated.
Well, there's no such thing as equality. It doesn't even exist. There's no two human beings that are equal to each other. Much less two entire classes of people. Now, I think striving for equal treatment under the law, like if you go down the road at 5 miles over the speed limit and somebody's going to write you a ticket, I don't think it should be any worse or better than my ticket for doing 5 miles over the speed limit.
Well, men already pay more for car insurance, younger men.
Well, sure they do. So. But that's my extent of equality under the law, is that the law applies to everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, if you kill somebody and if you murder them, then the sentencing should be the same. But right now, the sentencing disparity between men and women in America is greater than it is between whites and other minorities.
Mm. Yeah, I saw another attempt to demonize men in an article you posted by some German lady, and it is climate change a man? The article goes on to say, yes, because men like big machines and cars and they eat steak and more food. So what does this mean? You guys fart more and you emit more CO2, so you're the guilty party.
Certainly women don't drive SUVs to the mall 3 or 4 times. They don't have needs for material goods whatsoever. Not a lot of shopping out of women in those malls that dedicate 85% of their retail space to women.
That's right.
It's absolutely insane what's going on. And what's really insane is that this information, this data, is right in line with the idea that men commit all domestic violence, that men can't be raped, that all this information that gets put out, all of it goes unchallenged. You don't hear anybody in network news, mainstream news, standing up and saying, hey, where's the backup for this? They've been parroting a false wage gap in the media for 20 years. It has been put out in one form or another. The most recent was in 2007. The American Association of University Women released a study that in their executive summary said that for every dollar earned by men, women earned 80%. Buried in page 26 of that study, even the AAUW acknowledged that after you controlled for life choices, time on the job, education, and experience, that there wasn't a wage gap. So it was in the very study that they used to prove there was a wage gap was the proof there wasn't a wage gap, and even that wasn't challenged.
That's just ridiculous.
It sort of makes my job easier, to tell you the truth, because it's kind of like shooting fish in a barrel.
Yeah.
These people make it easy to prove how disingenuous they are. The challenge is in whether or not anybody in the society cares, and whether or not that they have the courage, if they do care about it, to speak up. And that's where we're lacking.
And you get accused of being a woman basher a lot too, right?
All the time. I hate women. I eat kittens. I love people. I torture puppies for fun and as a pastime. I've been accused of everything. I'm a left-wing ideologue. I'm a right-wing nutcase. I'm a libertarian jerk-off. You name it, that I've been accused of it from one side of the fence or the other. But the fact of the matter is that every one of those ad hom attacks represents somebody that can't sit down and argue the points of fact.
That's right.
That sort of stuff does not bother me. I sort of expect it, and I exploit it where it's necessary. We just had McLean's magazine, in one of the largest magazines in Canada, do a piece on us and misquoted me all the way through it, just blatantly lied. And so I write an article about that, and it ends up drawing some of McLean's readers to a voice for men, and they start figuring out, hey, we're being lied to. I wonder why.
I want to ask you, what do you think about babies in America? I think this is horrible. Baby boys being circumcised?
I think it is. I don't even use the C word. It is male genital mutilation.
Yeah.
It is not a legitimate surgical procedure. It's not a legitimate religious practice. It is mutilating the sexual organs of most all male children born in this country. It's doing something that we would not dream of doing, but it gets worse than that. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but there's a campaign underway right now, and there's big pressure and money behind it, to circumcise 28 million African men of all ages by telling them that circumcision will prevent the transmission of HIV.
Bullshit.
Of course it's bullshit. It's absolute bullshit. But there's a lot of money behind it. And it turns out that one of the biggest proponents working through the UN, I don't have his name right now, but I could get it to you, who is pushing this along with Bill Gates, along with Hillary Clinton and a few other people, also owns the patent on one of the clamping devices they're going to use in these 28 million circumcisions.
Of course.
So the conflict of interest there is absolutely outrageous, but it's going ahead, and they are lining up political power in Africa. They are recruiting clergy there to push the circumcision message. And then most importantly, they're recruiting women to tell men that if they want to have sex, if they want to be a real man, they'll get circumcised.
And they also tell women, oh, sex is better once they're circumcised, which is bullshit.
Absolutely. And we have our news director, Robert O'Hara, has formed an African circumcision committee that's looking at this and doing reports on it. He's been on the radio down there in Kenya. It is absolutely amazing what's happening. And again, we go back to the cultural problem here. We do have a real problem, and I'd be the last person to assert that government is the solution, but we have a very big problem with being wired not to see the sort of things that men go through. It's how we can have a campaign to sexually mutilate 28 million people in Africa going on right now, and nobody knows about it and nobody cares. It's amazing.
Yeah, there was a Scandinavian study that showed that guys that were circumcised, they lost their sensitivity and they were craving more violent sex.
I did not see that, but I do know that there has just been a study released finally, empirical evidence that showed the exact number of nerve endings that were severed and the fact that male genital mutilation reduces male sensitivity by upwards of 75%.
Jeez.
So the idea now, I've not heard that led to men desiring more vigorous or violent sex, but the idea, if they're desensitized, that it might lead to more extremes in order to get sensitized makes a certain amount of sense to me. I'm going to be looking into that.
Yeah, I agree. Yep. So also, what do you think about boys being raised by single moms? What's going to happen if a lot of boys in society just have a female presence in their life and no father?
Well, it's already happening. They're filling our prisons. They're filling our streets with gangs. If we look at, I would certainly recommend Warren Farrell's book, Father and Son Reunion. If you want to understand the importance of fathers, read that book. All the research is there, meticulously documented. When you look at any form of how we normally measure psychosocial development in boys, and in females too, because it affects young girls too to be raised without their fathers. But if you look at things like suicide, teenage drug abuse, teen pregnancy, truancy, dropout rates, mental illness, depression, school failure, any of the problems that you can imagine happening to you that the normal parent worries about and faces, they are aggravated a dozenfold by having a father removed from the home.
Yeah.
That is not, to me, an indictment of women. It is simply the truth. Children need fathers in order to be fully functional. And as we watch, it's amazing. A lot of this stems back to no-fault divorce. One of the functions I do see for government is that I believe it's there to regulate contracts and to do so in a very limited way, but it needs to happen, at least in my opinion. Marriage is essentially a contract. But what we did in Reagan-era California when he was a governor, he was the first governor to sign no-fault divorce into law. And what that essentially meant was that it was a contract that you didn't have to honor. And of course, a contract you don't have to honor is not really a contract.
Yeah.
It's an incentive to get out of it because it's Tuesday or because the pool boy is hot. So we ended up with a skyrocketing divorce rate immediately after the advent of no-fault divorce, which was passed with a real line of bullshit about how there were these millions of women trapped in patriarchal abusive marriages, and they just couldn't get out, the poor little darlings. And so we had to pass legislation to make it easy for them to get out, which is to say that we passed legislation that said you can get out of the marriage and take the house and take the car and take the kids and take his income because you want to, not because he did anything wrong, not because he breached his end of the contract, but simply because your therapist told you that you need to go find yourself. And it started happening. And as that happened, we also saw gang involvement skyrocket. We saw truancy, all kinds of other problems start going through the ceiling. And here we are 40, 45 years later with a bunch of social scientists running around saying, gee, what's happening to our youth?
Yeah.
Well, duh. Yeah. Their nuclear family's been destroyed by our laws.
So talking about the nuclear family, it is important to have a family unit, and within that there are gender roles, right?
Well, I don't know how important the gender roles are in that family. I think it's important for children to have a stable family, for them to have a mother and a father. I think that parents can decide what those roles mean, that they don't have to be so rigid. But I think when you take one of those two adults out of the picture, and when they don't have any concept of masculinity other than watching Everybody Loves Raymond or something like that on television, then you run into real problems. I mean, there's no denying that the nuclear family is the fabric of any society, and that our society is in deep trouble now because the nuclear family has been so attacked and so maligned and so destroyed. Whether it needs to follow some really rigid guidelines from 1950 in order to qualify as healthy for children, I'm not sure of. But I know that what we're doing now is horribly wrong.
Yeah, why does a family unit have to be something that someone else tells you what it is within a certain box, a certain confine? Because there's other families that are out there, you know, but they're healthy and they get along and the unit's functioning.
Oh, absolutely. You know, this is one of the things that comes up with the issue of gay marriage. Now, oh, by the way, I forgot to tell you, I'm also accused of being a homophobe, too. So that one off the list.
You can't say anything about being gay without being attacked of being a homophobe.
I can't even have gay writers on my website without even being attacked, because I do. We have this horrific, crazy national argument going on about gay marriage. Well, why is marriage a function of the state to begin with?
Yep.
Why do we have government involved? It's like, why do we allow the state to govern our relationship?
I agree.
Marriage is ostensibly a religious institution. Yep. If we allowed that, if we got out of the way and let people do what they wanted to do, I think you would see a lot of the conflict decrease in a lot of our arguments. We shouldn't be having an argument over whether or not to allow gay marriage. We should be having an argument on whether or why we're allowing the state into our lives to begin with.
Exactly. That's just it. And that's a really strong point. I'm glad you brought that up, because I too hear this come up again and again. And that's also my take. Have you also noticed that it seems soon scientifically we're heading towards maybe creating one gender so we all get along?
We won't. We'll figure out ways to go. There'll be subdivisions of that gender. I don't know. I mean, I maybe just my age and I'm too old school, but the idea of even imagining a culture of one gender seems a little bit too Robert Heinlein to me. So.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to defer to other people's opinions on that one.
I had one last question for you. I noticed in school, too, there's loads of feminist anti-male teachers. Is this planned? Where are they coming from? How are they getting in there?
Well, the academe is where they were produced to begin with. It was academic feminism, and we've seen this played out in a lot of our work. We've been involved with going to different university lectures where feminists are protesting and trying to shut down free speech at anybody trying to discuss men's issues. That is the hotbed. The war, A Voice for Men is growing in activism. It's not just growing in readership, it's growing in influence. We are starting to become, I'm very proud to say, a player in this realm when there had never been any players in this realm that did not follow feminist narrative. And we feel very strongly that this battle ideologically is going to be waged in our institutions of higher education. We're working right now with the National Coalition for Men to establish men's centers in universities across the United States and Canada. The reason for that being to give men a place of retreat from white ribbon campaigns and walk a mile in her shoes and slut walks and only men can stop rape and all this demonization, because, you know, we, and it is funny in one way, but it's really not funny. Right now in Canada, at Hamilton College, every young man that attends that school has to start his first day by going to an orientation class called She Fears You. And they marched in there, and they are told every last one of you is a potential rapist.
Wow.
And we don't want you to leave this room until you admit it.
Oh. Yeah, I saw something like that up in Sweden. They had something, but they were trying to tell you that everyone's really racist, but they're really just talking to all the white people.
Exactly. But this is something we would expect from 1936 Berlin.
Sure, yeah.
Be done with Jews. This is not something that you would think a society in 2013 would be engaged in, and we're doing it, and it's getting worse.
I'm surprised guys don't stand up and say, screw you, you know, speak for yourself.
It goes back to the programming.
Yeah.
For guys to stand up and say, screw you, which they are finally starting to do, they really have to be pushed into a corner. And we're finally getting there. Things are getting so bad with this stuff that men are finally starting to wake up and say, wait a minute, maybe these men's rights guys aren't such, you know, bug crazy after all. Maybe they're, what they're really talking about is really happening. And I think that's a lot of why we're growing right now, is that people are starting to wake up, that this stuff has been out of control for a long, long time. And now it's so out of control, you can't ignore it anymore.
Okay, really, last question for you. How do you handle the idea of the man in religion, the bad God that's coming after people, or the chauvinism that's putting women down?
Well, I handle it really fine myself. I'm an atheist.
Yeah.
So it sort of makes the point moot for me. But there's always the other side of the coin to that. Yeah, I think that there is this sort of, has been a problem with a patriarchal God that did all kinds of things like squash science. It's always been there. But at the same time, this is the same God that commanded all the men to go to war, that fosters gender roles, that harmed men as much as it did women. So am I answering your question here?
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't. I think that guy's an asshole. I wouldn't follow him. I can't believe people do. I can't believe it still works, you know? It works.
I used to have a bumper sticker on my car that said, I'd rather burn in hell than worship a God that would create one.
Oh, yeah, I know. What a mess.
Yeah, that sort of vengeful idea of God, it's easier for me since I really don't have an idea of God. But if we're going to, and I don't mean this to be offensive to anybody of faith, because, you know, A Voice for Men has a lot of readers that are people of faith.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't have much religious discussion for this reason, and it's pretty well known that I'm non-religious. But if we're going to believe in deities, at least we ought to have the common sense as human beings to believe in deities with good values. And right now, we're quite a ways from that.
Paul, thank you so much for your time and your hard work on your website, exposing what's lurking in the shadows. Anything else you'd like to mention before we close?
Thank you for having me here. It's been a very pleasant conversation. A lot of the interviews that I have are with not with people that actually want to hear the answers to the questions that they have. So I just want to tell you it's very refreshing to have had this conversation. I'm glad to have been here, and I do hope that your listeners enjoy it and will hopefully come visit avoiceformen.com and see what we have to say.
All right, thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, be kind to each other. We'll talk soon.
He hit me, and it felt like a kiss. He hit me, but it did.